Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Australian Emily Chung is the founding director of On The Map PR, a specialized music publicity agency. With 20 years of experience across Sony BMG, Sony Music, and On The Map PR, Emily lives and breathes music, working with artists such as Niall Horan, The Kid Laroi, Fisher, Grinspoon, 360, Boya & Bear, Pete Murray, and many more. For the Celeb Savant podcast, I have collaborated with Emily and her team on a number of interviews with the artists that the agency represents. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Emily Chung from On The Map PR. Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
Thanks for having me. I am in Melbourne, Australia, and I am great. Thanks. How are you?
I'm awesome. Thank you. So for the listener, Emily and I have collaborated for a couple of years on a number of interviews, and I decided now it's time to interview Emily, bring her into the guest chair. So Emily, let's rewind. At what age were you fascinated by this music world, and how did your journey progress into being part of it?
Yeah, great question. So I always loved music, consuming music. I was forced to play the piano, classical piano, when I was a kid. And then I dated a guy when I was at uni who was in a band. And then he's now my husband, actually, but I used to go on the road with him and go to heaps of gigs. And then I was at uni. I studied PR and journalism and managed to snag a job for Sony Music straight out of uni, which I was very, you know, got super lucky. It was who I knew. One of my friend's sisters was a PR manager there, and I managed to sneak in and talk my way in. They received like 200 applications for this. It was just a coordinator role at Sony Music at the time. And then she had just talked about going through all these applications, how her sister was going through them, sorry. And then that I'd be perfect for the job. And then I got to sneak straight through to interview process and then talked my way into it when I was 21, fresh out of uni. And then I've been in the music industry ever since.
So you said you were forced to play classical piano. So how long did that take, or how many years did you study it? And when you say forced, did you not enjoy it?
How do I say this? My dad is Asian, and it's a real thing that he always wanted us all to play classical piano. So I had to start playing piano in prep when I was age 5. And I was allowed to quit he always said, you can quit by the time you're 12, you can make up your own mind. And he always thought by then I would want to continue playing. But I counted down every damn day until I turned 12 and was able to quit, because it wasn't joyful for me. It was very classical, right? And that wasn't the kind of music that I liked listening to. I did heaps of my grades. I was a great student, but I didn't enjoy it. So I turned 12 and I quit piano on my 12th birthday. And I've really, truly never, even now, I just turned 40 and I don't regret it. The dad was always like, you can regret it later in life. And look, I work in music and I truly don't have any regrets ever quitting piano. I'm on the other side of music, where I belong.
You started off in Sony. Tell us about that first position at Sony after uni. And then what were your positions until you started doing On The Map?
So I started in a very, very junior role. As I said, I was 21. I started as the Victorian Promotions Coordinator. So I would facilitate more admin roles for the management team in PR. And then I would also look after my own secondary media. So that was like community radio and street press, rather than that next tier of media where it was like commercial radio and major papers. So it was an excellent training ground. I think I did, it was pretty quick actually. I did a year, I took it really seriously. I love music, I love what I do, I'm a hard worker, and I that was recognized. And then they sent me to Western Australia to run the Perth office when I was just on 22 years old. So yeah, I ran Point on music PR in Perth, and I did that for 4 years. And then I moved back to Melbourne to run the Melbourne office.
Okay.
And did that for a few years. And then I, random side note, is I left Sony to go on a TV cooking show with my sister. That was fun. And then I started On The Map PR, and we now service music artists that we work and contract with, whether they're independent or we're working with major promoters, record labels. And yeah, we kind of do the whole hog. We work festivals, releases, just regular day-to-day PR for artists as well. Always music.
When you're running an office like for Sony, for Perth or Melbourne, mm-hmm. what does that mean? So for the people who just maybe buy a CD every now and then, love streaming, maybe go to a concert every now and then, what does it mean to run an office for a record label in an area such as Melbourne?
My role was to run the schedules, the media schedules for all the Sony artists that would come through Melbourne, or for their releases, primarily for their releases, actually. And then if they toured, then we would also have something to do with that, depending on the deal that the artist had. But generally speaking, it would be making sure when there is an artist's single dropping or an album dropping, it's servicing it to radio. It's making sure we're getting radio, putting it in front of radio, having them consider it for rotation and official ads to their playlists. So week in, week out, it might be servicing the song this week, and then if it didn't get picked up next week, it's going back in with, oh, but you know what, did you see it, it got reviewed in Rolling Stone, all these other things we're chasing for that song as well at the same time, to get the puzzle pieces joining together and building the hype for that single and that artist and the awareness in the market. So we would do that for a single rollout into an album release, and then that would usually land and become a tour, and then the band would be on ground, or they'd be here for single drop or album drop, whatever it is, and then I would put their schedule together as well. If they were in town, build out a full promo schedule of getting them in front of the media, local media in Melbourne, for example. So that might be, we have the Project TV in Australia, which is like a commercial television show. It might be Breakfast TV. It might be a photo for the major paper in that market, going to Breakfast Radio to do interviews and performances. It might be hooking up an in-store at a record store on release. Basically running the schedule, locking down and facilitating interviews for the artist to try and give them the opportunity to hold the mic and speak about their release that they've got coming.
You mentioned putting the pieces of the puzzle together for chasing their song. I'm gathering that if an artist is better known, there are less pieces to slot in compared to if it's more of an upcoming artist, correct?
Well, yeah. If they're a known artist, it's more like a puzzle age 1 to 3, it's like 4 pieces.
So,
or if they're an indie artist, then we're probably talking like a 1,000 piece puzzle.
That's so funny.
Yeah, take a lot more hours.
Obviously, you having had the experience in the label world, did that help you easily when you started doing On The Map? Was you had those networking connections already, compared to if you just decided, okay, I'm going to do this, it would have been more difficult?
Oh, yeah. I think I got really lucky because I did my training at a major label, a global major. So I did all my media schmoozing on the company Amex. I built all my relationships around the country. I did some time in Sydney. I've met and schmoozed with media all around the country, and that was such a gift, you know. And then I moved those relationships into my, you know, my own business, and those relationships they still help me today. And even from my Perth days, and my office crew always joke with me, they're like, oh, don't tell me that was, you know, the head of the radio station was someone that you used to go to the pub with when you were 21 years old in Perth. And it really is that way. I moved to Perth and we were all juniors together over there, and over the last 20 years, we've all gone and done our thing, and half of my friends are now running the show at their publication or at their radio station. They're the big dogs now, and it's awesome because for my little roster, it's very helpful because half of the time, right? I know that everything we work, we have a capped roster. We're a small team of 5. So every song we work, I know is good. we curate our own roster. We only take on the stuff that we believe in and can talk passionately about. So if I can, you know, the power in using a PR and a publicist is accessing my relationships. And I know my relationships mean that your song can get played at the very least by the right people. And then if the song does the talking and it's a great song, then our job is done. We just need to get them to press play. We're the connector. We bring the relationships so that the right music directors and ears can press play. And then the song needs to do the rest of the talking and should stand up for itself. And then the rest is history.
You've got experience in the PR world, naturally, but from your experience and from the greater level of the world, how important do you feel is networking and maintaining relationships in a general day-to-day business world?
That is so apt that you say that, because I literally just sat on an APRA panel last weekend talking about the power of networking and the importance of relationships, and really for artists especially, keeping those media champions and relationships close and really nurturing them. And that might be a relationship with producers, mix engineers, that might be relationships with media directly. Like as you said, you do a birthday shout out, you know, that's a really beautiful touch. It's about that personal touch that really makes people go, oh, wow, I see what you're doing and I've clocked that and I'm going to remember you and this great podcast for you. So, you know, that's the power of the personal touch and a little bit more consideration and being bespoke. But networking is so beyond words powerful, because exactly as I said just then, you know, all those years ago when I was working in Perth, a really tiny market, it's a real training ground market, we were all just doing our training, and now having all of these people then continue on in the industry and all rise up the ranks and still having them on side is really powerful for my artists. And that networking, you know, you can relate to that at any level, whether you're an artist or whether you're someone behind the scenes in the industry. That just shows how important it is to, yeah, maintain those relationships and really have gratitude for those relationships and nurture them and keep them close, because you can help them and they can help you, and it's such a small industry. So yeah, it's a privilege to be able to call on people for what I do, but even for artists networking, to be able to go, oh, I've got a show next Thursday, it's just landed in my lap. I need some artists to maybe support, or I need a sound engineer for the evening, or whatever it is. You want to be able to move on the fly and move with flex and confidence. So the more people you have in your wheelhouse and in your peripherals, I think the more powerful and the greater your trajectory will be in this industry.
What is the difference between doing PR as on the map as a PR publicity sort of team compared to doing it in the record label world?
I obviously was trained at a record label, so a lot of my skill set is definitely record label minded. But I would say the difference is that we curate our own roster. So when I was at Sony, in any given week, I might have been servicing a song to media. It could have been a Beyonce and a JT track that we service to radio alongside a Yo-Yo Ma classical violin track, right? So it was very hard to be passionate. I'm employed to go and service these artists and these songs to media, but if I can get around the Beyonce and the JT one, it's probably going to be harder for me to get around the classical violinist and be as passionate. You know, my interests lie, not always, but, you know, usually in more one skew of music. Like we're pretty indie folk pop minded. So we curate a roster that we understand and that we really love to listen to and believe in. So I feel we're lucky because that guides us and we really enjoy every project that we work. And I feel like media probably can get that sense out of us. And also we keep a capped roster, which means we can work really effectively and we give the hours to every artist. And I know that at a label, it's not anyone's fault, but at a label, there are that many releases flying at you that next week, a release might pop into the release schedule this week for next Tuesday. And it's like, all right, how can I get some PR for this when I haven't even had time to set the record up and it's coming out on Tuesday? We were always just, you know, running up by the seat of our pants. We didn't have the time to be strategic and I think that's the power of artists being able to outsource their PR and use a team. We can be really strategic. We can get in front of the media early. We snag those spots because media spots are finite, you know. They aren't just running everything. So we can get in with the media early. We dedicate the time that the artist is employing us for and the job's getting done. Whereas I think when we were at the label and actually three of my team at On The Map I worked with at Sony Music, we did a lot together. And back in those days, it was really like we felt like we were kind of the mice on the spinning wheel where we just couldn't get ahead. And I think that's our privilege now. And I think I learned from those days and I said, that's not how I want this to be. And I think that's why we are so great at what we do and why labels contract back to us to roll out their releases, because they know that they can give us the project and trust that it's getting done to the best capacity. So yeah, it's giving the release schedule the time to breathe and grow the love for a release, not just racing and pedaling and hoping for the best.
So am I correct in my understanding that back in the days, I'm talking like maybe the 80s and 90s, maybe the early 2000s, there weren't really music-specific PR agencies. It was all done in-house, and the external outsourced one has grown because of the need, because of the rush and release and not having time, the labels have to do it. Am I correct in my understanding?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's also a headcount thing at labels. You know, labels used to be the be-all and end-all, and artists couldn't really, if you didn't have a record label back in the 90s, then who was doing it for themselves? No one. It was pretty much you had a record label or you didn't give the industry a crack. And I feel like labels have moved more to outsourcing their PR now because of headcount, because labels aren't as relevant as they used to be. People can record music in their bedrooms, really great music. In fact, I'm working an indie artist called Chuck Six, who has just released his debut single. It's his first ever single. It got premiered on Triple J last week. It just picked up the ad today. It got an Unearthed ad, and it's his first single he's ever released. And it's so great. I got a call from his manager who was like, just thrilled, and he's ex-Universal. So he was like, this doesn't happen. There's legs in this. We believe in this artist. Thank you for, you know, achieving this for the artist, but it's not even us. You know, we get a good song and we can get it, as I say, we can get the right people to hit play and then the song's got to do the rest. So, but it wasn't us. It was Chuck. He wrote the song, right? But yeah, he's a bedroom recorder. He played every instrument. He even mixed the song himself. So he did it all, and he's now just beaten half of the record label artists that service this week and got a straight up ad on Triple J on Earth. So you don't need a record label anymore. So I think record labels are becoming less and less relevant. So therefore their headcount and their label teams are shrinking. Therefore they outsource when they need things to be worked. So I'm just lucky that I did start this business so long ago. So we have great relationships and they know how we operate now. So we can snag those jobs and do them justice.
What percentage of your roster or your campaigns is coming from artists and management compared coming from record labels?
Great question. I think probably I've never actually even let that a thought, because my roster, we book our roster out every month. We're really lucky because we keep a capped roster. So I would say probably, like if I look at my roster this month, it's probably maybe 70% major promoter / major label, and then 30% indie. Yep. But every single month we hold a spot for a fully indie artist. Every month we will service a complete indie artist without management even. That was something that was my, when I set the business up, that was something that was, I felt really passionate about, because there were so many indies out there that were finding it really, you know, they were doing it for themselves and not really making any great waves when they had awesome music. So I set the business up and said, no matter what, always every single month, we will service a full indie. And the cool thing about it is the business has been going for since 2012 now. So what's that, 13 years. And now I have booking agents and community radio and all sorts of industry people keen to know who the indie is this month, because, you know, some months there will only be one. And, you know, it's this month they sit amongst Pete Murray, Justice, Conrad Sewell, 360, Fisher, you know, Melbourne Scar Orchestra. So a really great roster, but then there's this complete indie that they've never heard of, and they go, well, that's only 12 acts in any year that they're choosing over the year. So it must be okay. It must be decent. And it's cool, because I feel like in the way that the business has started, it's now become a little thing of its own. And these artists have a greater chance of getting, you know, a booking agent, management, hooking in with a great digital distributor, or putting a marketing agent around them, growing a team for them based on this little indie spot on the roster, purely because people are pressing play and then feeling passionate about it.
So I've noticed collaborating with you over a period of time, not only do you sort of push songs or albums of artists, but you also promote tours of artists.
Yes.
What's the difference?
So songs and tours, usually a tour comes after there's an album drop.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, even if it's a tour and an international artist like Justice, for example, there's usually some new music material somewhere along the line that they're going to tour the world. Or if it's local artists, there's usually a reason to tour. So bands, generally, the cycle is singles into album or EP into tour. And the way to make money in music these days is live. So usually it's recording to release, to then get on the road, sell merch, sell tickets, fund the next recording, essentially. Yeah, there's no real difference in the on the PR front, other than the fact that we work our best when we have new music and a tour.
Yeah.
Because then we can really be going for everything. We can put new music in front of the media, but then there's a plug at the end of the day beyond the music. It's more poignant and more relevant and timely to have a tour plug in the mix. Otherwise, it can be really hard to move media. You know, they might be like, ah, new song. Yeah, we'll come back to it. But if I'm like, there's a show at Forum Melbourne on this date, we then have a timeline that we need their support by.
I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. For me, it's an energy exchange to say thank you to the artists for all their hard work that they do.
Love.
I love the journey of the choice, unpacking all those type of elements, listening to song from one to whatever number. I'm sure being in the industry, you are aware physicals are a massive comeback. Last year or the year before, 5.9 million vinyls sold in the UK, the biggest since 1990. Also last year in the UK, interesting enough, they've got a basket of products that they gauge daily exchanges on. And there needs to be a high exchange every day for this product to be in the basket, and it's based on some other tax purposes. And because of the upsurge of CDs again, CDs are now back in this basket. The research is showing it's the teenagers, it's the younger kids diving into this world, not necessarily the older nostalgic people. Then, as we mentioned, we've got the streaming platforms. What are your observations of the landscape at the moment?
I think it's so cool that tangible products are coming back, and it's cool. Like, I even have indie bands that say, I just want to make a cassette to sell merch.
Yes.
How cool is that? I mean, that's how I found music, is I used to have to do it the old school way. And I feel like kids are so lucky these days that it's so easy for them. I used to have to listen to the radio with my double cassette, and I used to have to record from one and then get that one going, record to the next, you know, and that is how, and I used to have to wait. If I missed the song on the radio, then I got to wait for them. I got to listen, wait for them to back front announce it, be ready to hit record.
And the worst thing, and sorry to interrupt, the worst was when the DJ spoke at the end and didn't play the full song. It'd be like, ah!
You know how long I just waited for 2.5 hours for you to play the song, for me to catch the song, and then you've ruined the last 6 seconds of the song. My mixtape is not going to work. Totally. But you know what? That was part of the fun. And I think that's part of our childhood, right? I love that you hear where I'm coming from there. And I think it's so easy to access music on DSPs these days. It's almost too easy. And I love that the kids are wanting to go back to the CD, potentially back to the cassette, vinyl. I mean, I love vinyl. I'm like you. I pour my eyes over the actual physical release, and I love pulling out the liner notes and reading the lyrics. And I feel like it's so cool because the last decade, we almost lost the power of the lyrics because people just stopped caring about that, the lyrics in the liner notes. But now it's become a thing with reels. Do you notice everyone is putting, it's like lyrics up on their reels. So
okay.
I've noticed that the real move back to lyrics being important. And that to me speaks because songwriting is important. And I feel like it's going to make everyone improve their game when lyrics become important again, because commercial songwriting kind of became trash for a while there. It was pretty simplified, and the stuff that was working and the stuff that radio were playing was just real. It was, I'm going to cop heaps of backlash, but I feel like it was simplified.
Yeah.
And now that we're coming back to the lyrics, there's power in the songwriting again. I really feel that movement and I'm excited by that. How? To the point that I've taken my first ever artist to manage because her songwriting is so good. And I was like, wow, this is blowing my mind. She's 22 and she's such an incredible songwriter, and people need to pay attention because I think at the end of the day, it still has to come back to a great song, right?
Okay, so you said you've taken your first artist to manage. Why had you not done it before? And this is something new, obviously, but you had observations of it in doing everything you've done. So are there any aspects of it that you're actually surprised by that you may not have realized were part of it?
Well, firstly, I'll say that I never wanted to manage. I never wanted to move into management. It's not something that has ever interested me. I do get a lot of our indie artists and actually household names ask about management, just because I've been in the industry for 20 years and I have touched it all in terms of marketing and been in studio from inception to completion on songs and then rolled them out strategically to market. So I do get asked often about whether I would have any interest in management, and I've easily every time said no because there's so much involved. It's so time consuming. I am time poor. I have three young children as well as running a business. So it is not anything that I have any interest in. However, this artist came past my desk and it was the very first time I felt compelled to say, I need to help you because you're actually going to take over the world. You have the power to go large. So it's either going to be, and I joke with her about this as well, I'm like, it's either going to earn me $0, Barrett, or it's going to retire me. It's one or the other and nothing in between, because that is music in Australia in 2025.
I think that's music everywhere in 2025.
Yeah, true. And I don't even think I answered your question. Sorry.
No. So are there any parts of it that are surprising to you, having doing it hands-on, but because you've seen it for so long as an observer, yeah, that there's nothing really that has surprised you?
There's not heaps that has surprised me other than the fact that it's really hard to, it's hard to cut through. And I do know that on behalf of the artists that we represent, and we feel our way through it. We love and truly believe in all the artists that we work with. Otherwise, they wouldn't make it to our roster. But I think when it's your very own artist that you are helping, you feel it harder. So when a song, and we're very, like, we're definitely in developmental stage. So we haven't rolled out heaps of releases yet, but we did drop a song in December, just before Christmas, and it did great. It hit all of the goals that we wanted to achieve. But I also, in the back of my mind, I'm like, God, it's a great song. And why didn't it go that little bit bigger? But as I say to all, and I say this, I said this on the panel on the weekend for APRA, artists need to set goals to take away that guilt of, oh, you know, I wish it got more. And creatives are so self-critical anyway. They tend to be more self-critical. So the importance of setting goals is tenfold for them, because otherwise they'll be down on themselves and there's that guilt in, why didn't it achieve? And if you set the goals, then if you actually hit that point, which we did with my artist, we can celebrate that and not be like, oh, really hoped it would get more. But then, yeah, if you don't hit those goals, then you can also assess before you drop the next single,
yeah,
hey, could we do better? And how can we look at this situation, assess it, and make some changes in what areas to hit those goals next time? So I definitely think goal setting is important. But, yeah, I think I feel it more for her because I feel like I'm almost part of the artistry, even though I'm not, and I feel it for all my artists as well. But yeah, just a little bit closer on this one. So want it for everyone. But yeah, when you don't get that radio ad or whatever, it's a real, you feel it.
How has the industry changed besides the streaming and the obvious things that we as observers in the world see? How in the back end has the industry changed over the period since you've been in it?
When I first started at Sony, they had just stopped blasting press releases by fax. Remember the old fax machine? So I really feel sick to say I've seen it all almost in this industry. And then, you know, rolling through, definitely I was post cassette and definitely in the CD world. But I was here for the, you know, the turfing of the CD as well. I sold my whole CD collection, Barrett. I know. So, yeah, that was probably silly in hindsight. But I was like, how could I store it? And I kept all my vinyl. That's forever. But yeah, I mean, when I was a kid, I bought all of my collection in CD. So I lost all. The very first album I bought was Alanis Morissette, Jagged Little Pill. Why would I have sold that? I sold my Michael Jackson history, and I have memorabilia. But I sold my CDs, and there is a little regret there. But yeah, I've seen everything from fax to CDs to vinyl to nothing, where merch sales were really hard at live shows, to now the resurgence of all of the above. And also in the industry, just people needing record labels to not needing them, to being able to record by themselves, to be able to assemble their own team. And there's such power in that. So I guess I've watched the industry grow and swell so hugely with the artist intake and the noise. It's hard to cut through the noise, but it's just, it's what an exciting thing is. There's so many artists recording and being able to record. So I think everyone has a shot, right? And everyone, it's a level playing field more so now that you don't have to have a label to get that big break. But also something that I say regularly to my artists is you don't have to have that big break to be able to make an income in music either. You can be really clever. You don't have to be a known name to be a full-time musician.
The podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, two aspects. A, advice to any artists, upcoming artists who may be listening. And to the listening audience world, what would you give pieces of advice to those two target audiences?
To the listening world, support your favorite artists, because if you don't go to their live shows, if you don't buy their merch, they're not actually going to be able to afford to go into the recording studio and record you their next album that might become your most favorite piece of art ever. So support artists, everyone. Get around your artists. If you love them and you want them to stick around and be able to make a viable business, then you need to help support them. You've got to put that money into their pocket because you're consuming their art. And it's pretty easy. It's a cool brief to go to your local venue and go see a new live act that you've never heard of, and it might really blow you away. My advice to the artists would be, what a privilege it is to be a recording artist in 2025, where I feel like we've moved away from everything needing to be polished and highly curated. The power to the indie artist in today's day and age is to be authentically true to themselves. So how cool is that brief? Like, it's not like you have to, you know, you have to put on a 3-hour face of makeup before you get on and do a live Zoom, or, you know, the people are connecting to getting to know the artists in their natural state. So yes, while 20% of it might be when they're in their full get up because they're a theatrical act or whatever it is, but, you know, it's the behind the scenes that everyone's interested in. And Billie Eilish is a great example of that, where she really gives herself fully to the person that she is when she's not on stage or not in the recording studio. So, and I think everyone values that, and that's how you build your community. And as an artist or band, what you need is to build that community. And once you do have that community, it's going to be about them. Anything you deliver them, it'll satiate them, and they just want whatever it is you're going to deliver, and they're probably going to dig it. It's not about them hearing the song and liking it or not liking it, because if they're part of the community, they're going to take it on in and love it, because they're on board for you, the artist. And that's all of you. That's, you know, you riding your horse because that's what you do on a Saturday when you're not on tour, or whatever it is. Giving those real insights as to who you are across socials is super important. Yeah, it's about, the tip is, don't withhold content and wait for just the perfectly polished grid. Share it all and be real. And same with your music. Keep sharing. You've got to be smart in this industry. You've got to tap into the power of the algorithm. Don't fight it. Don't sit there going, oh, you know, AI is really messing with this. It's so hard to be an artist. The ones that survive are the ones that embrace it. And yeah, keep rolling out that material, because persistence is what is going to get you there.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.